Yeah.
No, he's supposed to be.
I thought he was out today.
Are you kidding?
I don't know if I'm kidding or not. I know. We don't have any, that's great, we don't have any meetings. There he is. Commissioner is here. Commissioner Leonard, can you please find your way? Sergeant of Arms, can you go find?
He's coming in with me.
Oh, there he is, okay, we were wondering where you were. Because he's our liaison to the Rose Festival. Good morning. Today is Wednesday, May 25th, 2011. The City Council will come to order. It's 9:30. We're in morning session. Hi, Carla.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well.
How's your garden?
Good.
Wet.
Wet. Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. The quorum is present. We shall proceed with the agenda, beginning with a 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for items number 506, a presentation, and emergency ordinance number 507.
506, Portland Rose Festival Foundation. 507, grant revocable permits to the Portland Rose Festival Foundation to perform activities relating to Portland Rose Festival annual celebration from May 7 through June 30, 2011.
Yeehaw. Commissioner Leonard.
I will turn over to Jeff Curtis. Come on up, Jeff.
Good morning, Council. I'm Jeff Curtis. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Portland Rose Festival Foundation. It's a privileged to be with you this morning as we're on the eve of the 2011 Portland Rose Festival Carnival of Roses. Before we get into the ordinance, we have a presentation from the 2011 Rose Festival Court, and I'd like to introduce to my left the president of the Portland Rose Festival Foundation, a great volunteer, been with us a long time, Sue Bunday.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Saltzman, and Commissioner Fish. I am Sue Bunday, president of the Portland Rose Festival Foundation, and honored to come before you today. I'm equally humbled to lead a volunteer board of 65 directors and thousands of additional volunteers from our local community as we kick off our 104th Portland Rose Festival. Over the past 15 years, my role on the Rose Festival board has offered numerous opportunities to lead parades, committees, events, and more. But I still hold my fondest memories during my tenure as the chair of the court of 14 young women who represent the Rose Festival, their schools, their families, and our entire community. This year's court has traveled these past few weeks all over the state, sharing with so many others what makes the Portland community so special and what the Rose Festival has to offer, as we truly have something for everyone. These outstanding young women are true ambassadors for the youth of today, and each is unique in their scholastic achievements, community service to others, and personal interests. I'm going to let the court tell you a little about themselves and this year's festival, and I think you will agree that we feel the Rose Festival makes Portland a better place to live and visit.
Hello, we are the 2011 Rose Festival Court presented by Pacific Power. We'd like to introduce ourselves and tell you what's happening during this year's Rose Festival. Taylor.
Hello, my name is Taylor and I am from Wilson High School. I'm captain of the varsity soccer team and I plan on attending college and pursuing a career as an elementary school teacher. You can be a team player too by coming to help support the Portland Rose Festival fundraising, dinner and auction, Roses on Broadway, happening on October 14th at the Hilton Portland and Executive Tower.
Taylor.
Hello, my name is Taylor, and I'm from Parkrose High School. I've been on the varsity track and field team as well as the dance team for 4 years. One of the healthiest ways to celebrate the Rose Festival is by participating in the Regent's Grand Floor Walk. Join thousands of Portlanders walking and waving down the Spirit Mountain Casino Grand Floor Parade route just before the parade happens the morning of June 11th.
Annie.
Hi, my name is Annie, and I'm from St. Mary's Academy. I was the president of Dance Club and am the captain of the St. Mary's Academy Dance Company. I want to double major in business and dance, and during high school, I participated in several mission trips building houses in underdeveloped communities. The Rose Festival is also building something spectacular this year with a new name. Waterfront Village is becoming City Fair, opening May 27th. It features activities such as carnival rides, special attractions, and musical entertainment. You'll be shocked at its transformation.
Jerisha.
Hi, I'm Jerisha from Cleveland High School, where I'm a member of the National Honor Society and International Baccalaureate Program. I also volunteer at the Oregon Humane Society and through Multnomah County Library. Come see Oregon's greatest organizations light up the night at the Portland General Electric Sol Starlight Parade on Saturday, June 4th, or watch it live on KGW News Channel 8.
Erica.
Hi, my name is Erica, and I'm from Benson High School. I'm the secretary of the American Red Cross Club and a member of Health Occupation Students of America. I plan to pursue a career as a pediatric nurse. If you enjoy seeing smiles on children's faces as much as I do, head down to the Fred Meyer Junior Parade on Wednesday, June 8th. Come watch thousands of kids march, dance, or pedal bikes down Sandy Boulevard in the Hollywood District.
Cassie.
Hi, I'm Cassie from David Douglas High School. I'm a member of the Pride team and also the captain of the volleyball team. In my spare time, I like to tutor children. If you want to learn something cool, take a stroll through time on the Rose Festival's History and Roses Tour, presented by Windermere. The History and Roses Tour gives you a passport to the beautiful historic landmarks that makes our city the Rose City all year long.
Maya.
Hi, I'm Maya, and I'm from Grant High School. I am the Black Student Union President, and I'm also a member of the National Honor Society. Show your Portland pride for the 2011 Rose Festival at the opening day fireworks spectacular on May 27th. The Portland waterfront will be lit up with fireworks as we open City Fair. So come on out and see one of Oregon's largest fireworks shows.
Taylor.
Hi, I'm Taylor, and I'm from Glencoe High School. I'm the ASB Vice President and a member of the Key Club, and I am also the dance team captain. If you would like to see who is going to lead us as the Queen of Rosaria, come join us at the Pacific Power Queen's Coronation right before the Grand Floral Parade on Saturday, June 11th at 8:30 a.m. in the Memorial Coliseum. We would appreciate your support.
Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm from Lincoln High School. I'm a member of Lincoln Leadership, and I have volunteered with the Teen Theater Troupe through the Dougie Center. I plan to pursue a career in the music and business industry. If you love music as much as I do, be sure to come visit the Rose Zone at City Fair. Rose Zone will be City Fair's new entertainment venue for 2011, featuring national acts.
Heidi.
Hi, I'm Heidi, and I'm from Central Catholic High School. I'm a member of the National Honor Society and have been on the honor roll for 4 years. I also volunteer at Lowe's and Fish's, delivering meals to the elderly. Delivering meals can sometimes feel like a race to the finish. If you enjoy watching auto races, join us at the Rose Cup Races. The region's best amateur auto racers will be pursuing their dreams of winning from June 17th to June 19th.
Uma.
Hi, I'm Uma, and I'm from Madison High School, where I am a member of the student government, and I serve on the Sun Coordinating Council. Come celebrate the men and women of this country by attending the Danner Memorial Day March on May 30th. Here, you will be reminded of what this historic day is all about.
Lamara.
Hello, I'm Lamara, and I'm from Franklin High School. I'm a member of the National Honor Society, the Advanced Scholar Program, and I'm also a member of the Link Crew. Come see a very special Grand Marshal crew, the Oregon Duck football team, lead the Spirit Mountain Casino Grand Floral Parade on Saturday, June 11th,
find your place along the parade route, or watch the parade live on KJW News Channel 8.
Kristen.
Hello, I'm Kristen, and I'm from Roosevelt High School, where I play varsity soccer. I plan to pursue a career as a lawyer. Last year, the Portland Rose Festival found a home in a beautifully restored historic building in Waterfront Park, and this past Saturday, on May 21st, we had our public open house.
Nadia.
Hi, I'm Nadia from Marshall High School. I'm a varsity cheerleader, and I was voted the most inspirational player for my senior year. If you want something inspirational, check out the Amtrak Cascade Character Clown Corps. The Rose Festival just added the mascot. Watch out for his special appearances throughout the Rose Festival season.
Thank you for hosting the 2011 Rose Festival Corps presented by Pacific Power. We'll see you at the Rose Festival.
That truly represents the very best of our city and the very best of our festival. It's quite a privilege to lead an organization that's capable of running a program that really embodies the spirit of our city and our community and these young women. So I'm very proud to lead that group, and they are truly wonderful representatives of our community. I want to have Kathleen come up from the Revenue Bureau to, as we have the business side, to talk about the ordinance and go from there.
Good morning, councilors, Mr. Mayor. That's a pretty tough act to follow. Very inspirational. I just have a few words to say about the work that the Revenue Bureau does to pull together all the different events involved in the Rose Festival each year. It's my privilege to have very slight involvement. A lot of the credit from the Revenue Bureau goes to Allison Madsen, who is the Special Events Coordinator. It takes a tremendous amount of work from numerous city departments and other agencies every year. And as we were discussing this morning, the work begins about 5 minutes after the last festival is over. I think we tend, because these events are so well coordinated and there are so many dedicated volunteers and city employees working on it, it comes out very smoothly every year, and we tend to take the work for granted. So I just want to recognize the tremendous amount of work by the Portland Police, the Department of Transportation, the Water Department, Parks and Recreation Department, TriMet, Multnomah County, ODOT, and the councilor's offices and the mayor's office in this effort. Jeff Curtis and Sue also are incredibly cooperative, and the many volunteers of the Rose Festival work not for days or hours, but for weeks and months and all year long to make this a very successful event for the city of Portland. I couldn't think of any funny jokes about the weather this morning, so I'm just going to turn it over to Jeff and Sue.
Thank you. I just want to put a little summary to everything you heard this morning related to the festival. But one of the first thing is that I never take it for granted that it takes leadership of our city council to authorize the Rose Festival to even take place. It's been they've been doing this for 104 years. Your colleagues before you, colleagues before them, have sat in a room and said yes to the ordinance that allows this to happen, to give us the streets, to get the bureaus, to motivate those folks to lead and actually produce the world's leading festival here in Portland. So I want to thank you for that leadership. And your leadership over the last 3 years, as we've moved this organization forward through recessions and difficult times, we are right now on the verge of a renaissance. And I think you'll see it in the spirit of Portland, and you'll see it in the festival that we're producing. There's some highlights within those all these events that I could quickly summarize. Really, it's the five parades. No city has such five different and unique parades. And I say five because we've added a fifth with our Regent's Grand Floral Walk, which is a fitness parade. No other city has, or festival has, quite a unique aspect of community coming together in the form of parades. I talk about growth. This year we'll add 15 different new events to the Rose Festival calendar, new events, increasing our audience and our participation. Talk about the traditions, the Queen's coronation, the Rose Cup races, events that we've had on our calendar for decades are all part of this year's festival. And talk about innovation. What you're going to see at City Fair, the new event down at Waterfront Park, reflection of our community, and the entertainment down there is a renaissance of its own and an example of innovation in our event planning. And last but not least, sustainable planning on our festival organizers that you've actually challenged us to do, to plan our future and assist us along the way from a financial perspective to make sure this festival is well-planned and well-executed and financially sound as we produce more festivals in the future. And that's something that is always in our thinking because we'll never take that for granted. It's about building a future festival in general, and that's what we're incredibly excited about our efforts because we are moving in that direction to build our reserves and to increase our events to continue a world-class festival. But I'm very proud of the festival you're about to see in 2 days in the next 3.5 weeks. So thank you very much, Council.
Well, thank you for making us proud and for your esprit de corps of continuous improvement and for all the volunteer hours. So thank you. Does anyone wish to testify on 507? It's emergency ordinance. Carla, would you please call the vote on 507?
Fish.
Jeff and Sue, thank you for all your great work. You have no greater champion in this building than Commissioner Randy Leonard. And I was very proud a year or two ago to partner with Randy on what resulted in your new home in Tom McCall Waterfront Park. And I think the public should also know that recently the Rose Festival stepped up and made a very generous contribution to the city to help us maintain the park, which you call home base. And you have helped us leverage other private resources, and that's another example of the leadership that you give to our community. And to the young women who we are honoring today, this is the first year that this event has felt kind of real for me because I have a daughter your age. And she's a graduate. She's about to graduate from high school like you are and pursue the next part of her journey. And I can actually remember when Ann Nino Birch was about 12 years younger than she is today. And I watched her grow up along with my daughter. We are so proud of what you have accomplished at your schools and in our community. And everyone up here is rooting for you as you make the next step in your lives. And we hope you find the fulfillment and the joy in your lives that you so richly deserve. And thank you for being our ambassadors. Hi.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to wish a hearty congratulations to the Rose Festival Association. And here's to a successful extended season. I think this is the second year now that we've started Memorial Day weekend. Yeah, so it's a longer season, and that brings both its challenges and opportunities, as we all know who live here in Oregon. And I want to thank the Rose Festival Court for being such bright, outstanding representatives of our city. I had a chance to sort of mix and mingle with many of you at the St. John's Parade, and I'm very impressed with your poise, your backgrounds, and your intentions to succeed in future. And I want to wish you all the luck in the world in achieving your aspirations and representing our city not only in the next 3 weeks, but for the rest of your lives. You will be ambassadors for the city of Portland. So thank you very much. Aye.
Leonard?
It's great that Portlanders get to view the finished product year after year and see it for what they think it is, which is a wonderful celebration, not understanding, as I believe Jeff and I intimately understand, the blood, sweat, and tears that occurs to bring the festival the way that it is seen by Portlanders today. I would be the first to confess that some of the issues have been challenging to get the Rose Festival to where it is. In fact, some of the issues that Jeff and I have dealt with have included generating the most emails I've ever received on any topic. I don't even want to mention the topic, but of any topic I've ever dealt with. But I think that the product that we see today is a result of a lot of those efforts and more on behalf of you and your colleagues at the Rose Festival Foundation, which I proudly partner with and look forward to working even harder with to bring more success. Aye.
Fritz.
Yesterday evening, the mayor hosted hundreds of people in this chamber to celebrate the Future Connect scholarships of graduating seniors going on to PCC Sylvania, and it was a wonderful event. It's so great to have the princesses here this morning to celebrate another part of what makes Portland really special. And I know that each of you cherishes the honor that you have been given by your schools to represent them. I want to give a special shout out to Nadia, the last princess from Marshall, and you're all really great. And it's very right that we celebrate like this and that we take the time to recognize our students who've done well, our community when we do well. What better way to celebrate than a parade where we forget some of our differences and we get together and celebrate what's our sameness, that we like it when the sun shines for the Grand Floral Parade. And it is wonderful that we have the walk and everybody can participate in the walk or roll. You can come in whatever kind of device you need to participate in that. And let me tell you, when people have been sitting waiting for overnight to get their space in the parade, they're really glad when you walk by, even if you don't have a float. So, because it means that something is going to happen very soon. So you'll have a wonderful time during the festival. Thank you to Sue and Jeff and everybody who puts it together. It's part of what makes Portland really special, and I really appreciate all of your work. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I had an opportunity to have some breakfast with you this morning. We had a great discussion. Clearly, a great representation of some of the best of Portland, and really appreciate your volunteer, your service. It's a great tradition, and it's fantastic fun. So encourage everyone to partake in the realm of Rosaria, and I will see you at the Starlight Parade. Aye. So approved. You're welcome to stay and watch democracy
happen. Mayor, I think they've asked for a photograph with us.
Oh, please, line up. Where, over there? Should we do over there? Yeah, around here. They have a certain... Watch this. This is great. Yeah. Show me how
we
you
need
did.
To practice this, Mary, with our photograph.
Do they know where to go? You go back here. Let's get a window.
Thank you all. Great
to meet you.
See
you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. So let's see. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
You pulled 519.
What did I pull? Why did I do that? Can you please read the title for 519? Why did I do that? Do you know?
519, grant revocable permit to Terrapin Events to close Southwest Salmon Street between Southwest NATO Parkway and Southwest 2nd Avenue and Southwest 1st Avenue between Southwest Taylor Street and Southwest Main Street and Southwest Taylor Street between NATO Parkway and 2nd Avenue from 5 p.m. on October 22nd, 2011 until 2 p.m. on October 23rd, 2011.
Unless there are objections, this is referred back to the mayor's office. So referred. Unless there's other discussion, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have two related time certains. The first one is at 9:45. Can you please read the title for report item number 508?
Approval of the fiscal year 2011-2012 budget for the City of Portland.
I am now convening this meeting of the City of Portland Budget Committee. I am opening a hearing to discuss the possible uses of state revenue sharing. This hearing is being held by the City Council of Portland, Oregon, in compliance with the provisions of the State Revenue Sharing Regulations, Oregon Revised Statutes 221.770. It is to allow citizens to comment on the possible use of these funds in conjunction with the annual budget process. As proposed for City Council adoption, the fiscal year 2011-2012 budget anticipates receipts totaling $12,389,324 from the state revenue sharing. As has been the case in prior years, it is proposed that this revenue be allocated in equal parts to support fire prevention and police patrol services. Is there anyone here today that wishes to be heard on the subject of state revenue sharing? I'm now closing the hearing to discuss the possible uses of state revenue sharing. All right. Let's see. I will entertain a motion. I will entertain motions to amend the proposed budget.
Yeah, and actually, Mayor, just a motion to entertain the changes to the proposed budget as presented in the memo, and then we can go on to the end.
Second.
I have moved changes to the proposed budget presented in the memo in our briefing books. It's been seconded. Once it's been moved and seconded, can you? It has. I'm reading my instructions. Can you please describe the changes in summary form?
Yes, I will definitely do that. So, you all received last Friday what was filed. This is the what we call the change memo to the proposed budget. It lists in attachment B, which is in table form, all of the changes that have occurred between the mayor's proposed budget, which he presented that the official printed version of that in his message last week, and proposals, changes that we're putting forward from financial planning. So I won't go through all of these. I am going to note sort of the larger items. And again, I'm on attachment B, which is the table form in your budget, approved budget package. One of the changes to note, and mostly I'll focus on the general fund side, cable, there's $48,750 being added for the formal renewal process for the Comcast franchise negotiation. This is carryover money from the current fiscal year. Going down the page a little bit, under OMF, we are reducing the general fund contingency. This is part of the $10 million that is being carried over, reducing that by $500,000. To fund the prevention and rapid rehousing in the Housing Bureau. We're also at the same time increasing funding in the compensation set-aside special appropriation. This is the retirement payout that we also discussed during the spring bump. Again, moving down the list into the Housing Bureau, there's $150,000 being added for an in-depth housing study. Again, this is part of the carryover funding from current year appropriation, and then the very next line is, again, the $500,000, which we see the reduction in general fund contingency on the prior page, and then this is the addition of that into the Housing Bureau budget. And then finally, towards the bottom, under Parks and Recreation, there's the net adjustment of $80,000 for the Forest Park Wildlife Study. Again, that's being funded with carryover dollars. You can see all the other changes there, and I'm happy to answer questions about them. Just as a technical note, any item that has a zero in all the lines across, what that generally represents is a Bureau moving money between their operating fund and their contingency fund. From a total appropriation standpoint from the Bureau, it's a net zero, but we do note it because it's an important shift between operating and contingency. So,
Andrew, I have just a question in terms of procedure. Is it your preference that we adopt the changes in attachment B and then take up any amendments in budget notes?
No. So the in terms of just purely on budget notes?
Yeah.
Well,
do you want us to take this motion first and then come up and then bring other matters?
No, the budget note amendments should be done. So here's the process from here. I describe these changes. If there are any desires then for amendments, either to what we've put forward or new things to be added, each of those amendments needs to be moved and seconded for consideration and then voted on by the committee. There's then a vote to entertain essentially all of the adjustments, both the ones here and the new amendments that have been added, at which point then there's public testimony, and then finally council votes to approve the budget. So I think so budget note amendments would come at the same time.
I withdraw my motion since it appears premature.
No, it is not. Premature. It's, we're now going to make amendments to the motion. Is the what he's trying to say? You were right on schedule. So I will now recognize members of council for making amendments to the motion, which is to approve the changes. So basically, we're discussing anyone who wants to make further changes.
Commissioner, question first.
Yeah.
I just need a clarification regarding the $10 million in the carryover and the $1.4 million in unrestricted contingency. Is there any difference in those two funds? Could the council use the $10 million at any time over the next fiscal year if we so chose?
Yes. It would take an act to move the money out of that contingency into the appropriate
action.
This is
a rainy day fund.
Right. I understand that. So I'm wondering why we're taking the $500,000 out of the carryover, the $10 million, rather than reducing the current unrestricted contingency.
Because we use up the contingency by the end of this year, so the only way to do it is to bring forward some money from the rainy day fund.
No, we have, as my understanding is, we have $1.4 million in unrestricted contingency.
For
in
next,
our next
year.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
My preference is, I proposed it this way, my preference is to begin the year with a complete contingency and tap the rainy day fund for some of these items that we heard raised as part of the public hearings and public feedback. You could do it either way. This is the way I would prefer to do it because I want to start next year with a full contingency. And the general fund contingency has certain parameters and due diligence to it that I think are important to keep in place as we begin the new fiscal year, but it is a judgment call.
Thank you. That's a good clarification.
So we'll begin. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I have an amendment, and I'll make the motion, and then I'll give an explanation of it.
Sure.
I move that the council allocate $372,000, $372,327 from the general fund's contingency operating reserve line item to the Bureau of Development Services Enforcement Program in order to create 3 full-time housing inspector positions. This would be a one-time allocation.
Second. Don't we want this out of the beginning fund, the rainy day fund, though? Given what I just said?
It seems to be where discussions I had with your office yesterday said this should come from.
Led you
well,
astray.
Could you say again, Commissioner Saltzman, where the funds were coming from?
From the general fund's contingency operating reserve line item.
My preference is the rainy day fund.
I think those things are the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the technical name, and then there's the...
Yeah, just to be clear, Commissioner, yeah. in answering the questions from your office yesterday, I think you were pulling some numbers out of Table 9 in the proposed budget document. That includes all, and this gets back to Commissioner Fritz's question, the city's general fund contingency is one overall account. We have sub-accounts within that to firewall the dollars. So, for instance, the $10 million is firewalled off as the rainy day fund. The $1.4 million is our unrestricted contingency. Compensation set aside, I believe, still shows up in there as well. So that's why the number is, you know, it's the larger number.
So it's out of the rainy day fund.
Okay.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded.
Okay. Question. I can just give a brief explanation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
As we heard at the budget hearing last Thursday evening at Jefferson High School, we're all aware of the need for better enforcement of our rental housing, code, and enforcement of violations in rental housing. Our record has been woefully inadequate over the past 2 years due to the funding situation the BDS has found itself in. BDS enforcement staff have been working incredibly hard just to keep their heads above water and to make sure that the most dangerous threats to people and structures are followed up on. The council and community owe them a big thank you. And in my short time overseeing the Bureau of Development Services, I am just incredibly impressed with their efforts. But they need help. And this modest use of some one-time general fund dollars is the perfect way to jumpstart the enforcement program. The 3 positions I'm proposing will help leverage other efforts in housing equity in our community, and also bring more enforcement penalty funds into the Bureau of Development Services. It is no secret that in these days we find people living closer together, more people living in a unit than perhaps in the past, and it's more important than ever that we be making sure that the rental housing stock is free from mold, free from vectors, free from decaying structures, and other things that we've all seen the photos before. and these are serious threats to life and safety of rental housing occupants. And with these three positions, we're going to be in a better position to enforce the law, the public health and safety law, and to get the job done and to protect people's health and safety.
So, Carla, can you please call the vote?
I have a question.
Yes.
About this, please. I certainly support the funding of the housing inspectors, but I was wondering why the number is so high for three positions, and I understand that it includes buying each of the new inspectors a new car at $28,000 per car, and I'm wondering why that's necessary considering the BDS staff is so diminished. Why aren't they able to use the fleet cars?
Well, you are correct. We want to have these people, you know, these people need to be out and about. I would ask Bureau Director Paul Scarlett to maybe come up here and provide any response on that point.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor, Council members. I'm Paul Scarlett, Director for Bureau of Development Services. The question about the cost of the vehicles, yes, in the item, it points out about $28,000 for new cars for each inspector. When we reduced our staffing level, we returned vehicles to, I guess it would be OMF, Fleet Services. And so we no longer have vehicles that were assigned to previous inspectors and would need to get new ones similar to vacating the sixth floor of the 1900 buildings because we didn't need the additional space. We certainly can explore other opportunities for assigning vehicles or getting inspectors' vehicles, but given their job functions of doing inspections outside, we would need to have them equipped with vehicles.
Well, I guess I'd need to ask then Fleet, don't we have those vehicles still available? Did we sell them?
They would still need to be sold back to BDS at a cost, so we could certainly explore that.
I would.
We don't have those
respectfully
vehicles.
Suggest, Commissioner Salzman, that we take that $84,000 out of this appropriation until you've explored the vehicle issue more.
So maybe I could help explain. So when they return the vehicles, Bureau of Fleet Services quits charging the Bureau for the vehicles. Right. When they're reassigned to the Bureau of Development Services, they charge them again for the vehicles. So that money has to be in the budget for them to have the vehicles. They aren't cars that are purchased by the city in general that float around from bureau to bureau. They ascribe the costs to the bureaus that use them, much like the rental that the BDS pays for space up at the 1900 building. When we occupy the space, we pay rent. When we don't occupy the space, we don't pay rent. When we hire people to occupy space that previously was unoccupied that we don't pay rent on, we have to pay rent again.
I understand that, but $28,000 each is buying a brand new car.
Well,
for each.
If we want to appoint a negotiator from the council, I'm glad to go negotiate a better deal for cars, but that's
not the cost of fleet. People don't pay. Staff doesn't pay fleet $28,000 a year
each,
for a
car. They may have reassigned the cars. They may have done a number of different things with the vehicles that we turned back to them, and these are probably replacing those with new cars.
Right. And additionally, we are exploring biodiesel vehicles, which was something we do with each new vehicles we get for our inspectors.
And I understand that, but this request is for housing inspectors. It's not a request to buy BDS three new cars, and I think it should be separate.
It's a request for housing inspectors that includes vehicles to do their job, correct?
Yeah, I mean, probably housing inspectors, more than most employees, need to be highly mobile. They go to various parts of the city to enforce the housing code at all hours of the day and night and weekends, and more than most require an automobile.
That's correct.
So I would suggest, you know, leaving the funds in there. If we don't need that full amount, then we'll return it in the next bump. But we need some money to have vehicles to go help these inspectors do their job.
And I would suggest that it should be fleet money rather than buying them a new vehicle each.
Well, they buy them through fleet.
Still charges.
There's a general purpose fleet that we get to check out, and then there's the fleet that is maintained and assigned to bureaus. There's the general fleet, and then there's the bureau-specific fleet. So the Water Bureau, the Transportation Bureau, BDS.
Police Bureau.
Police Bureau. They all have their own fleets that are not available to general purpose for general purpose use. So
when they gave all the vehicles back, when we halved the staff, did that money then go into BDS's budget? Did they sell them back to Fleet?
They quit paying whatever they were paying.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with the exact situation, but generally what would have happened is that any replacement funds that would have been paid in over the years for those BDS vehicles would also have been returned to BDS at the time.
$28,000 is not rental for a year. It's purchasing a vehicle, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But that's, again, there was probably fund. There were most likely BDS funds in the replacement fund. They returned those vehicles and then received those funds back. And that was part of, I mean, BDS made a lot of cost cutting on their interagencies in order to get through the last couple of years.
That's correct.
So I'm interested in getting the best, most economical access to the vehicles, but I do think we need the vehicles. So I would suggest we pass the amendment. We will report back, and if we don't need the full $28,000, then we'll return it in the bump.
Mayor, I move the amendment.
Second.
Yeah, it's already been moved and seconded, so I will call the question. Carla, would you please call the vote on the amendment as described, summarized by Commissioner Seltzer?
Fish.
Dan, thank you for bringing forward this amendment. A little over a year ago, Commissioner Leonard and I brought to council the recommendations of the Quality Rental Housing Workgroup. It is the intention of this council to fund the recommendations of that body, which anticipate a much more robust system of rental inspections. Due to the downturn in the economy and for other reasons, we haven't been able to move forward on that. This allows us to invest in a enhanced inspection program in the interim. This is something that Paul Scarlett believes passionately about and has been advocating, has the strong support of Commissioner Saltzman and Leonard. And as the Housing Commissioner, I will say that this is completely in alignment with our core priorities. And I, too, wish to join Commissioner Saltzman in thanking the Community Alliance of Tenants and the other groups and individuals who came out and testified so effectively at our public hearing. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as I said, this is it's just not tolerable to have people living in substandard rental housing, and we're not going to tolerate it to the extent we can make that difference. And these resources, these additional inspectors and their vehicles will allow us to, I believe, make a dramatic difference in the lives of people living in substandard rental housing. I do want to thank also the Community Alliance of Tenants for their organization around this and my colleagues here for supporting this amendment. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, when I first arrived at council in 2002, I was assigned the Bureau of Development Services, and it was a challenge to get to the place that the Bureau finds itself today, which I believe is one of the best development bureaus, building permit issuing bureaus, not just in the region or the state, but in the country. They have transformed themselves into a very proactive, thoughtful, and problem solution-oriented agency. It was very difficult to lose that assignment and have it go to Commissioner Saltzman after all those years of working, especially with the friendships I've established with people like Paul Scarlett. I just can't thank Commissioner Saltzman enough for bringing this amendment and for the advocacy he has demonstrated on behalf of these outstanding men and women who do great work. It's difficult and challenging work because they're constantly criticized by the nature of the work that they do. It's heartening to me to know Commissioner Saltzman has taken at least as strong a leadership role as prior commissioners in making sure this Bureau gets what they need to do the job the public expects them to do. So I'm very grateful to his leadership. And thank you, Paul, for your ongoing good work. Aye.
Fritz.
I certainly support money for housing inspectors, and the Community Alliance of Tenants has done a wonderful job of helping renters organize and get their rights. I trust Commissioner Saltzman to look into the vehicle issue. If there's an extra $84,000 in this appropriation, I would like any savings that could be made to be put to helping landlords make the improvements if the landlord's not able to do that themselves. And I would have preferred this to come out of the general fund contingency, the $1.4 million, rather than from the rainy day fund. With this and the $500,000 for housing, it takes the rainy day fund down to more like $9 million, which makes me very worried for next year. But I defer to the mayor's judgment on that. I do encourage my colleagues to then save as much as possible out of contingency next year so that we have an ending fund balance in contingency to carry over instead. Aye.
Adams.
Support this amendment. Good amendment. Aye. Commissioner Saltzman.
I have two budget notes. I will start with the, which one's next? The Bureau of Environmental Services PBOT budget note. I've handed out copies. You should all have those in front of you. Last December, the city auditor issued a report on the interagency agreement between the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Bureau of Transportation to provide sewer service maintenance services. The report suggested that if those services were shifted to the Bureau of Environmental Services, ratepayers could save $1.7 million in the first year and $1 million each year thereafter. I've spoken to the mayor about this several times. This budget note directs the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Bureau of Transportation, and the Office of Management and Finance to hire an independent consultant to make recommendations on any financial and operational efficiencies to the interagency agreement, and the consultant will begin work during this calendar year and report back by the end of the calendar year.
Second. Discussion from council. I need to move us along. Can you please call the roll? Please call the vote on the amendment.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment is approved. Mr. Saltz. Commissioner Saltzman.
The last budget note concerns the Portland Bureau of Fire and Rescue and the fire bond. The discussion we had about the fire bond's purchase of rapid response emergency vehicles and the staffing of those emergency vehicles. So we had that discussion April 6th. I did at that time mention that I would be bringing a budget note and read the budget note, and that I said that I plan to introduce it right now. So this is the budget note. That basically says that OMF, working with Portland Fire and Rescue, shall hire an independent consultant, consultant to prepare a report for council consideration comparing Portland Fire and Rescue staffing and deployment levels to like Metropolitan Fire and Rescue departments. Particularly, the report shall address efficient and innovative methods of recognized service delivery. The report shall also provide data to assist council in determining whether the new rapid response vehicles being purchased with funds from the 2010 fire bond shall be staffed utilizing existing or new personnel. The report shall be prepared and presented to council within 6 months of the budget adoption in a council work session.
Second. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Commissioner Fritz. Fish. Sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I have a friendly amendment to a budget note and then a question. I'll pass out my friendly amendment. Mayor, you have charged the Portland Parks and Rec and the Police Bureau to move expeditiously to develop a location and a plan for a new public safety training center. And the proposed budget has a note that sets aside $1.785 million for 10 consecutive years to repay a $15 million bond. The friendly amendment to that note would provide as follows. OMF, Portland Police Bureau, and Portland Parks and Recreation are directed to return to council in the fall bump with refined project timeline, cost estimates, comprehensive financing strategies, and a report on the prospects for public-private partnerships for this project.
Second. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on the motion?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I'm assuming that this means that in the fall bump there will be public testimony in order to discuss whether to move forward with the proposed training facility.
Correct.
Aye.
Adams?
Correct. Aye. Good amendment. Commissioner Fish.
And Mayor, the question I would like to pose to Andrew or to the mayor has to do with the PBOT budget note that's underlined. I think it was one of the last additions to our exhibit that has to do with the utility license fee and how that operates. And could we just get a clarification about what the intent is and whether this is represents any change from existing policy?
What are you referring to?
So the policy of the council has been...
Last budget note.
The policy is the council has been that up to $4.2 million
in...
$4.3 million based on the set point of passage of council policy would go to the Bureau of Transportation. For the purposes of balancing this budget, we have hit the pause button, and I'll let Andrew do the technical analysis, but hit the pause button, and that everything above 2.2, which is the existing amount going to the Bureau of Transportation, everything between 2.2 and what's in the forecast for ULF revenues will continue, will not go to PBOT, but instead will go to the general fund. If the revenues go above the set point amount in the five-year forecast for increases over the next 5 years, anything above that, then that would go back to PBOT until we meet our original policy goal.
Of 4.3.
Correct.
So is that...
There's no guarantee.
Okay. So that essentially restates our existing policy?
Yeah, it actually resets it. So in 2008, council passed an ordinance that anything above the March 2008 forecast would go to PBOT up to $4.3 million. We were showing some ULF increases over the next few years, and so in order to balance the mayor's budget, he, again, said, let's hold it at $2.2 million, and instead we use that as part of our five-year balancing.
So the mayor cut his own budget.
Right. And now what we're doing is we're resetting where before it was on the March 2008 forecast, now it's on the April 2011 forecast. And now we're saying all of the money that's in the forecast right now for ULF, except for this $2.2 million, goes back to the general fund. If we get higher than expected increase in ULF, it would go to PBOT.
Up to
$4.3 million.
Thank you for that clarification.
And to clarify, this is ongoing utility license fees, not the one-time settlements.
That's correct.
One-time settlements still to us and go back into contingency, right?
That's right. We back out the one-time.
And
any other motions?
To clarify, what is the purpose within the Portland Bureau of Transportation for the money, that the $2.2 million? Is it specified as to what it's used for?
It is, and off the top of my head, I can't remember. It basically is our GTR pool,
yeah.
But we do, by law, I think we have to specify what it goes to.
Do you want us to just report?
Well, I'm a little concerned that I thought that it was for maintenance and provision of basic services like sidewalks and paving and such. That's something that we need to keep plugging away at.
Well, it's the entire budget. I think that is where it goes, but I can't remember off the top of my head. It might also go to street signals as well, but it goes to the basic work of the Bureau.
We can ask PBOT to just tell you where they've spent
those
funds.
Thank you.
I'd like to see that too.
I know the mayor shares my concern for those basic services like street lighting and sidewalks, so we'll need to continue working on that.
Well, as everyone knows, my priority has been, and supported by this council, reducing deaths and injuries, and so we have a backlog. The backlog that we're trying to chip away on urgently is the most dangerous parts of the system, and so that oftentimes is sidewalks, but a lot of the time it's also street traffic lights. So having these resources allow us to just move further, faster ahead on those. Commissioner Fritz, did you have amendments?
Yeah, so we don't need to vote on that last
one. There's a clarification.
No, just an inquiry.
Okay,
thank you,
please. I have two for the Water Bureau, which I think I don't know if they're clarifications or what. The first states that City Council directs the Portland Water Bureau to comply with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's long-term 2 LT2 enhanced treatment rule regarding open reservoirs and to pursue a variance with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and the EPA for treating Bull Run water for Cryptosporidium under the LT2 rule. That's currently in the budget note. I would like to add that Council directs the Portland Water Bureau and Portland Parks and Recreation to conduct an open public process to plan desired uses of the reservoirs if it is decided to have them taken offline. Then there's a companion second added budget note. Obviously, we are going to comply with the federal regulations. Complying can also include seeking a variance. And we heard a lot of testimony both at in multiple settings, and I think I have something like 170-odd emails urging this, to look at having a timeout and a delay. We can't change the rate that we set last week, essentially, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to change the rate in time for the end of the fiscal year, and that would put our credit ratings in jeopardy. So what I'm proposing is the second budget note, which states, the city shall work through work sessions and a public hearings process in year 2011, this year, this calendar year, we shall evaluate alternatives to timeline, storage options, and treatment related to the LT2 compliance and determine if it is possible to pursue variances to treatment, storage, and if necessary, to treatment and storage, and if necessary, an extended timeline for meeting LT2 compliance. Any net monetary savings attributed to changes in the LT2 requirements will be placed in the rate stabilization fund and distributed in the following years for rate reduction to Portland water users. I mentioned this when we had the rate hearing, so that we are going to look at how we, if it's possible, to get any variances to change our timeline and our plan for compliance.
Well, I'm happy to discuss this later when this issue comes up in the agenda later. But the it would appear that I should probably go over some of what I was going to say then, now, and then possibly repeat it. So in 2009, specifically November 4th, 2009, I wrote a letter to Pete Silva, the assistant administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency. And I won't read the whole letter, but I will read a portion of the letter. The whole letter has been distributed to council and is part of the public record. I respectfully request clear written guidance from your office regarding the City of Portland's intent to pursue an administrative variance to the open reservoir requirements of LT2. I received a response on December 16th, 2009. This response has been distributed widely, but I will, for brevity purposes, read the relevant response. In Mr. Silva's letter to my request, as discussed at length in the LT2 preamble, studies by the EPA found that uncovered finished water reservoirs are subject to contamination from many sources, including birds, animals, humans, algae, insects, and airborne deposition. The variance found in the Safe Drinking Water Act is not available to the city's uncovered finished water reservoirs. The compliance plan and schedule for meeting the LT2 requirements for the city's uncovered finished water reservoirs was submitted on March 27, 2009, and the city should proceed with implementing that compliance plan and schedule. At last week's hearing on this issue, I had the administrator, David Schaff, read a transcript of a phone message left for him by the governor's assistant, who is responsible for now the state's overseeing of this project, who said that no variance would be available for the, and we have followed that up since in other communications, for covering the reservoirs unless we ran into a construction issue during the middle of the project. The one thing that I have resisted doing in public life, and sometimes to my benefit and sometimes to my detriment, is not telling people things that I know are not true or are not possible. It is not a comfortable thing to do. It is not a way to enhance one's political standing, but I think it's the responsible thing to do. And I have been working on this issue nearly full-time since assigned the Water Bureau in 2004. I could, again, do here what I've just touched on, read through the voluminous dates and meetings that have occurred since I've received this assignment that includes public hearings, that includes, for instance, the PERB at two different meetings here and an open public meetings they have.